of marriage? What is the purpose of marriage? And the truth is that any fool can get married. But it takes a lot of wisdom to stay married. Okay? Unfortunately, today in America, 50% of all marriages end in divorce. 50%. And second marriages, even more, end in divorce. So it takes a lot of wisdom to stay married. Plus, unfortunately, we're facing another crisis. And that is, there's a tremendous singles community. People seem not to be able to get married in the first place. Even though we said fools can get married, seems that not even that's possible today. So we're facing two major problems. Number one, the dearth of the traditionally nuclear family. A nuclear family, I mean mother, father, and children. That's a nuclear family. And the breakdown of existing marriages. So the two problems we're facing, that's the problems in society. The trouble we had, don't have nuclear families, not enough nuclear families. So you have single parent households. And the other problem is when people do get married, it breaks down. The two problems we're facing. So what is, in the Jewish view, what is the purpose of marriage? So when you talk to people, you ask, what is the purpose of marriage? Most people say it's to have children. Wrong. Wrong. What does the Torah say? Right at the beginning of Bereshit, which is Genesis, when the Torah talks about the creation of man, Hashem says, Lo tov hiyot adam levado. It's not good for a man to be alone. Let me make a helper for him. Okay? So right at the beginning, the introduction to the creation of woman was, it's not good for a man to be alone. So we see over there the purpose of marriage is, number one, a social purpose. To have a partner in life. One of the problems we're facing today is loneliness. There's a lot of people who are very lonely. Very lonely. And what do? Media. Media keeps them company, so wherever they go, the radio's on, the TV's on, this is on, that's on. But still they're lonely. Because they don't have a partner in life. And Hashem says, it's not good to be alone. Interesting. Loneliness is not good for a person. In fact, what is the worst punishment in a civilized country?
Solitary
confinement. Let's think about that. Hashem says it's not good to be alone, and that's the worst punishment there is. The Ramban, Nachmanides, when he explains, he says, when Hashem created the world, God said it's good. We are Hashem Kitov, Kitov, Kitov. It's good, 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 right? And all of a sudden we find it's not good. What's not good? Loneliness is not good. So he says, when Hashem says it's good, by the way, there's a beautiful line one of the comedians had. What's his name? Famous comedian. Anyway. So he says that, I don't want to quote him anyway, so he says, look at the difference between God and General Electric. General Electric creates a new refrigerator. They say, it's fantastic, it's great, it's amazing, it's out of this world. Hashem created the world and he said, V'yah Hashem kitov, it's always good. He didn't expand, he didn't exaggerate. So it's good. He said, look around. The refrigerator lasts 10 years, breaks down. The animals are still running around. The rabbit's still running. The trees are still growing. Hashem says something is good. Ramban says, it means it's lasting. When Hashem says it's not good, it's not going to last. The situation is not going to last. It can't propagate itself. A person alone cannot propagate themselves, even though people today want to try. You know, clothing and other things. I just saw the UN want to pass a recommendation against cloning human beings. The ethicists of the United Nations today, I just saw it in the newspaper, they want to pass a law against cloning. They don't recommend cloning. It's too dangerous. But God is telling us it's not good to be alone. It's not good. What do you mean it's not good? It's not going to last. Something's going to happen. It's going to crack. Something's going to happen. And so therefore, what should you say? You know what? I'll stay with my father or my mother. What does God say about that? No good either. Al ken yazov ish et aviv et imo vidabek beishto. So the man should leave his father and mother. So the person says, you know what? I'm lonely. I'll move back in with my parents. I'll save money on my apartments. We don't get along that great, but you know what? I feel lonely. I'll go back to my mother and my father. That's not the remedy. Hashem says that's not the remedy. The remedy is, unfortunately, we see in divorce sometimes, they separate and they go back to their parents. And it doesn't work out either. That's not a remedy. Hashem says that's not a remedy. Cling. Look at the word over here. Dabek. Glue. Stick to. Glue. Cling to your spouse. Cling. I had a distant cousin when we went to Vancouver. He lived in Seattle, so I started, you know, I went somewhere, I gave a class. He comes out of the woodwork and says, I'm your cousin. I said, what are you talking about? So we have a common ancestor. Great-grandfather. We're related somehow. Amazing. So he comes over to our house and my children stick to him. Wherever he goes, they're following around. Says he calls them Elmer's glue. You're like Elmer's glue over here. But that's what the Torah wants. The Torah wants us with our spouses to be like glue. Cling to your spouse. Cling. Dabek b'yishto v'yeh basar echad. And be one flesh. There's a new creation over here. Marriage should be a new creation. We're creating a new human being. A human being with two heads, four arms, four legs. Think about it. It's a new kind of creation. That means a united couple can be in two places at the same time. Think of the power of being a couple. You can do two things for the same purpose. And that's the way marriage should work. It's powerful. But that's the first idea of marriage, is companionship. It's not good to be alone. And we said when Hashem says it's not good, it means it's not going to last. So that's number one. That's very important. Number two. We can't avoid it. Procreation. The second purpose of marriage is procreation. That's also right at the beginning of Bereshit, chapter 2, verse 18. Pru urvu. Well, it's also in chapter 1. Pru urvu, increase and multiply. This was a mitzvah given to the animals and also given to man on the sixth day of creation. God blesses his handiwork and he says, increase and multiply. And replenish the earth. So there are two views, classical views of marriage. Number one is partnership, companionship. And number two is procreation, children. Nurturing your family. There's a third purpose. And this third purpose is negatively worded, but of vital positive significance to the welfare of society. And that is the constraint on illicit sexual relations. In other words, to ask human beings to be celibate all their lives is wrong. And Judaism does not advocate celibacy. That's Catholicism. Judaism says holiness is channeling one's energies. Judaism never says don't use your energies. Whatever gifts a person has should use it in the right way. I was talking to a person, I remember our shul, became a Lubavitcher chassid. It was about 50 years ago. He happened to be an engineer in college. And he wanted to go to yeshiva. And in fact, he went to Crown Heights for a year. And the Rebbe, who was young at that time, told him, I want you to go back to college. I want to learn Torah. Go back to college. Goes back to college. Today he's a PhD. He has his own company. But he still regrets. He just doesn't know why the Rebbe told him not to learn yeshiva. He said, yeah, I regret it. But the Rebbe said, this is my mission in life. Because you're good at something. In other words, we all have gifts, talents, and we have to use it. It's a tragedy not to use the talents. But you have to use it in constructive ways. You have to use it according to the law. Because we have to have kosher outlets for our energies. The Torah does not say, take away the energy, destroy the energy. No, the Torah says, use the energy. And we all have this energy. To tell a human being, don't utilize your sexual energies, is wrong. What we say is, utilize it. But in a proper relationship. In a kosher relationship. In a kosher way. Simply like eating. Do you want to eat? Good. Go to a kosher restaurant. Eat. I'm not telling you not to eat. certain things you can eat, certain things you can't eat, but the Talmud says, whatever you can't eat, there's always something kosher which tastes the same. The Talmud says, there's even a fish in the sea which tastes like pork. Or, I don't know how they knew, because how are they going to know? If we ask, I'm not Jew, tell them, you know, there's like, yeah, there's a fish in the sea that tastes like pork. Amazing. Huh? Doesn't? I don't know. I would never know. You can't catch me on that one, Bob. It's funny because I was walking past Charlie Brown once with one of my members, and I smelled the smell. Wow, what a great smell! He says, "Rabbi, you aren't referencing anything." I then ask him how he knows, but. So, number one, companionship. Number two, propagation of the species. Number three, to manage the sex drive. Negative. Rabbinic teaching sees celibacy as unnatural. In fact, the holiest man on the holiest day of the year, who is that? High priest. Had to be married. And if he wasn't, if his wife dies, what happens? Same day his wife dies. Same Yom Kippur his wife died. What would happen?
He steps down.
His assistant takes over. Even though Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah says, let him marry two wives, just in case one dies. So the Gemara, the Mishnah says, Ein ledavar sof. There's no end to it. Maybe he should marry three, four, five. There's no guarantees. So we don't follow that opinion. We follow the opinion that says, no, he steps down and someone else takes his place. So we see that it's so important. Completion is through marriage. A person has unmarried, he can't be holy. Mind is not. His mind is thinking about other things. It's only possible to reach holiness through marriage. A person has to be married to reach holiness. Number four. And this is the number fourth, which is completion. A person who is not married is not complete. The Talmud says, and this became the blessing under the chuppah, Talmud says in Yevamot, page 63a, a person who is not married lives without joy, without blessing, without goodness, without Torah, and without peace. A person who is not married may not be the high priest. Today we don't have any high priest. So what is there instead? He cannot be the chazan on the high holidays. Person who is not married should not be the cantor on the high holidays. No, he can't be rabbi. Why not? Rabbi doesn't take much. It's just if you're in contact with women all the time, you shouldn't. Unless the person's married. If he's just a rabbi and he's, he's not necessarily with the community, he can be a rabbi, he can be ordained someone who's not married, no problem. So, what do we see over there? Marriage is so important that a Sefer Torah may be sold to facilitate a marriage. You can sell a Torah. What's more important, someone getting married or a Torah? Sell the Torah to get married. Marriage is more important. You can sell a Torah for other reasons. What are the other reasons? Number one.
Life saving,
you can do anything.
Ransom.
To ransom, a Jew's held to ransom. You can sell the Torah.
Teach children Torah.
What's the use of having a book when they're not learning? What's more important, a book on the bookcase or learning Torah? There's an interesting question. One of the great rabbis, he collected manuscripts, very wealthy person, Rabbi Sassoon. He was a wealthy Jew from the Orient. And he collected all the manuscripts of the Rambam. He had mass manuscripts. And the yeshiva needed funds. So he had to ask a question, can I sell the manuscripts of the Rambam to fund the yeshiva? And they said yes, based on this halakha. You can sell a Torah to fund a yeshiva. And to redeem captives and marriage. Three things to sell a Torah. You're allowed to sell a Torah for these three things. But the person should not just sell a Torah for nothing. You have a Torah in your house, you're not allowed to sell it. You have these three things. You want to marry off a daughter, marry off a son. You want a neighbor to get married, you can sell the Torah. Marriage is so important. And the first thing, we bless a child. Can you imagine naming a child? Naming a child. What do you say? She's care. What do we say? You're naming a baby. We're blessing the baby to get married already. The baby just got born. If it's a boy, You say, may this child grow up for Torah chupa mazim tovim, to learn Torah, to get married and do good deeds. If it's a girl, we say that her parents should merit to see her chupa. Hey, she should just go marry. Give a break. Give the baby a break. Just go. What do we say? Why are we blessing the child already to get married when he's born? Because that's the purpose of a human being. That's the whole purpose. The whole purpose is to find the other half. And completion. The purpose of being born is to complete oneself. And one of the ways of completing oneself is through marriage. That's interesting. One should never approach marriage lightly, the Gemara says. And an individual must choose wisely. Obviously, it's a person got to really, the biggest decision a person's going to make in their life. It's not what car they buy. You know how much time people spend on buying the right car. They read the consumer reports. They do this research. One of the British poets, I think it's Byron, I'm not sure which one, he says, the British spend more time on the pedigree of the racehorses than on their wives. Imagine these guys with their breeding. You know, they're breeding cats or dogs or this and that. They examine the pedigree to the 10th generation. They get married, nothing. No research. Person's got to do research. It's very important. It's not something taken lightly. The Talmud says, the earlier the better. Shmona Esrei L'chupa. Mishnah and Pirkei Avot. Okay? What is the order of the Mishnah? It says, 5 years old, you start learning Torah. Torah Shebichtav, written law. When you're 13, Bar Mitzvah. When you're 15, Talmud. 18, marriage. So it's part of the order of life. 18, marriage. And that's the right time to get married, is earlier. Today, the Chafetz Chaim says up to 24 years old. First, you should not delay past 24. And we see today the product of people not getting married. They're fooling around. Immorality is widespread and rampant. That's one of the problems. That's part of the product of the permissive society, Freud. We can thank Freud. And we can thank the women's rights movement for liberalizing promiscuity. Only a person intensively occupied in Torah study and who has no sexual desires may postpone marriage. That's the only time a person may postpone marriage. I didn't say blame the woman. I said it's two things. The Bible in Devarim in chapter 20 discusses who should be sent back from the war. Who should be sent back from the army? So number one, there's two kinds of war. What are the two kinds of war? There's the obligatory war, which every Jew has to fight. You're attacked by an enemy, everyone has to go. There's another kind of war, which is called a war of permission, which is, if we want to increase our borders, now it's impossible today to fight a war of permission, because you need a prophet to say it's okay, you need the Urim v'Tumim, which is the breastplate, to say it's okay, you need the Sanhedrin to say it's okay, so we don't have any of those three. So there's never going to be a war of permission. All the wars today are wars of obligation. But in a war of permission, which means you just want to increase your boundaries, the Torah says three kinds of people go back from that war. Number one, person built a house, never lived in the house, go home. Number two, a person planted an orchard and never ate the fruits of the orchard, go home. Number three, a person who got married and never lived with his wife, go home. Marriage is so important, in other words, you're released from the army. So that's, like I say, the war in Iraq would be a war of permission. It's not an obligation, it's not life-threatening. So therefore, it's a war of permission. So therefore, in Jewish law, the guy just got married, free from, and people would take advantage of that. Because people would just build a house just to get out of the army. People would just get married just to get out. But there's a call-up. The guy gets married quickly, makes arrangements, gets married. He gets off the army, can you imagine? And there's a fourth category, that is a person who's scared. They announce, imagine going to war. They announce, whoever's scared, go home. Well, that's, you already lost 50% of the army. But you know what? The commentaries say they didn't want to shame the person who was scared. So they said the other three categories as well. They don't want to shame the guy who's scared. So you built a house. Maybe you built a house. Give him credit. Maybe he got married. Maybe he did this. Maybe he did that. So he's scared. We don't have to be scared. Rambam says, from this order in the Torah, Rambam says, be practical. First, he says, get employment. plant your vineyard. Two, build a house, and then get married, he says. Not like the fools who do the opposite. First they get married, and they build a house, and then... Build a house doesn't necessarily mean buy a house. It means get a roof over your head. Rent. So there you rent. You have a roof over your head. The Talmud says, a woman also should get married early. In fact, it's regarded as parental responsibility. A man has an obligation, parents have an obligation to get their children married. It's a parental obligation. Today, unfortunately, parents are failing, and children don't want to be told. That's part of the parental failure. It's the parents' obligation to get their children married. Based on a biblical verse, the Torah says in Vayikra, chapter 19, profane not your daughter to make her a harlot. But to leave his daughter. She gets older and older and older. She's going to fool around. Don't profane her. So it's the parents' responsibility to make sure that she's married legally. She's living in a moral union. And don't delay. Today, unfortunately, parents sort of wash their hands from the issue. Hey, what can I do? He's a grown up. Let him get married. Yeah. But they've got to be raised with the idea that marriage is good, marriage is important, and marriage is a natural consequence. If they don't raise the children like that, then it's not good child raising. However, we must emphasize, Jewish marriage is not designed for the ethical management of the sexual drive. Nor is it a concession to human weakness. Jewish marriage makes its appearance within the natural order of creation. Not as a law promulgated by Moses, interesting, but something which is a blessing from God. Because the Torah, it's interesting, the Torah does not say, after the Torah is given, on Mount Sinai, Moses comes along and he said, thou shalt get married. No, doesn't say that. Where does it mention marriage? Right at the beginning. When man is created, God says it's not good for a person to be alone. In other words, when you buy an appliance, you get a manual. Right? The manual says, don't dip this appliance in water, don't use it harshly, don't leave it outside, whatever it is. It tells you how to utilize the appliance to the best of its ability. When God created man, he also gave us a manual. He's telling us it's not good for a person to be alone. Not good. So that is a blessing from God. Marriage is a blessing from God. It's not a mitzvah. It doesn't say to get married anywhere. It doesn't say you have to get married. It's a blessing from God. It's not good to be alone. It's a big blessing. And the purpose is stated in the words. It's not good to be alone. So four words. Lo tov yot adam levado. Five words. It's not good to be alone. So marriage was not an afterthought designed to control passions, but part of the natural order of human society. The moment we are born, as we mentioned, we're destined for marriage. When a newborn child is named, the prayer is for a boy, Shizkele Torah Chupa Masim Tovim, he'll be worthy of Torah, marriage, and good deeds. For a girl, V'yizkeh Avi Avidimah, may her mother and father have the merit to see her joy and her chuppah, her marriage. So let's discuss a bit about completion. Number four, completion. The main function of marriage is to enhance personal growth. The main purpose of marriage is to enhance personal growth. Why? How does marriage enhance personal growth? Because without the obstacles and the give and take every day, the person doesn't have to change. Well, that's why some people don't get married today. It's much more comfortable without having to adapt oneself to other people. Marriage is all about change and adapting. And that involves a lot of growth. To be able to adapt, that is growth. All right, let me give an analogy. Which army is more powerful? An army which has got fixed views or an army just very flexible? It's interesting, the Israeli army is designed to be very flexible. The army has got to be flexible because not everything is written in a textbook. They're attacked in a different way. How do they respond? No idea. They're very rigid. They can't respond. You have to respond. You have to know how to respond. You have to be flexible. Same thing in terms of human growth. We are taught to be flexible. The Talmud says, you know, it's interesting, Sfaradim, when we write a Sefer Torah, what do we use to write a Sefer Torah?
Bamboo.
Bamboo. Ashkenazim, when they use a Sefer Torah, what do they write? Use?
Quill.
The Talmud says, to use a bamboo. Why? It says because the bamboo is flexible. It bends in the wind. And the Talmud asks, how come the bamboo is worthy to write a Sefer Torah with, not the cedar tree? Because the cedar tree doesn't flex in the wind. The wind blows, the cedar tree just falls over. Bamboo just flexes with the wind. It says a person should always be like a bamboo and not like a cedar tree. We should all be flexible. Let things slide off us. A Teflon. Because you should like to be a Teflon man. Teflon man means other people, they throw things at us and take abuse and let it slide and let it get away. It's very hard to be that, by the way. But that's part of marriage. Part of marriage is adapting and changing and giving and taking. That's human growth. That's how human beings grow. But a person who stays by himself will never grow. That's why Judaism says you want to be a tzaddik. Abraham argues with God, don't kill, don't destroy Sodom. What does God say? 10. If there's 10 righteous people in the midst of the city, God saves Sodom. What do we see over there? You've got to be in the midst of the city. It doesn't say there's 10 people camped outside in the monastery, God saves the city. No. It's got to be 10 righteous people in the midst of the city, then there's hope for the city. In other words, the job is giving and taking. The job in the world is getting along with other people. A person getting along with other people, that's a sign of greatness. A person can't get along with other people, it's a sign the person is not able to adapt. That's putting it nicely. Okay? So therefore, that's part of the function is human growth. Part of the function of marriage is human growth. Number two, we're talking about completion. So how does a marriage complete a person? Makes them grow. Number two, the Zohar says, Bar nash belo iteta plagufa. A man without a wife is half a body. It's hard to comprehend this. There's a beautiful story, great story. Rabbi Aryeh Levin. There's a book called A Tzaddik in Our Time. Excellent book. I highly recommend it. A Tzaddik in Our Time. He goes with his wife to the doctor. And the doctor's looking at him. Yes, what can I do for you? He says, my wife's leg is paining us. His wife's leg is paining us. It was the one body. The leg is paining both of us. Yeah. If she's hurting, I'm hurting. Who? She was?
She might have.
No, she wasn't. But still, it's hurting. I mean, he's compassionate, he's empathizing with his wife. He was hurting us both. My father-in-law is so smart. The day after I got married, maybe a couple of days later, he comes to me quietly, by myself. He says, I want to tell you a secret. Said, yeah? He says, you'll only be happy if your wife is happy. That's a smart father-in-law. You tell your son-in-law, huh?
He's a good father.
Good father, great father, mm-hmm. And great, good father-in-law as well. But very bright. So the way, psychologically, very smart. Now what? Tells the son-in-law, you're only going to be happy. If you want your own happiness, everyone wants their own happiness at heart, right? You want to be happy, right? You'd only be happy if she's happy. And you know what? She's only going to be happy. He didn't say this part. But I'm going to say the next part. The next part is, she's only going to be happy if you're going to be happy. That's how marriage works. If one party is unhappy, she's going to make you unhappy. Or you're going to make her unhappy. One of them is going to spill over. So it's very important. If each one works at making the other one happy, they're going to be happy as well. Very important. So now, let's go one step further. Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, who was the master of symbolism, the great German rabbi from Frankfurt on Main, who single-handedly fought against the Reform movement in Germany, who kept Orthodoxy alive in Germany. He wrote tremendous works of symbolism. He found a lot of symbolism in the Torah. He wrote about 60 books. Fantastic. A prolific writer. Genius in many different subjects. He's a professor in Berlin or whatever. He's a genius. The guy was a genius. He says, the word for a bride in Hebrew is Kala. This week's parasha. Happens to be this week's parasha. Pikudei. B'yom kalot et ha-mishkan. On the day they finished the Mishkan. The word Kala, he says, is completion. Who's being completed? They're both being completed. It's completion. The act of getting married is completion. The bride and the groom are completing themselves. They found each other, now they feel complete. So as this week's Torah portion just happened to fall out. Nothing happens, but it just happened to fall out. This week's parasha, the day the tabernacle was completed, it's called, the word used is Kalot, which is the word kala, which is completion. She completes the marriage, she completes her. Rabbi Soloveitchik, another genius. I'm going from genius to genius. I'm very lucky today. He was the rabbi of Yeshiva University, and he taught many classes over there. A lot of rabbis today are his students. Or great rabbis are his students. He says, he's quoting the Rambam, there are three categories of friendship. There are three kinds of friends. This is a generalization. And it also applies in marriage. There are three types of marriage. Because marriage is kind of friendship, hopefully. It should be a kind of friendship. So three kinds of friendship. Number one, the lowest level of friendship. Chaver ledavar. I'm a friend because you have something that I need. I'm your best friend. Chaver ledavar. Utilitarian approach. You have something I need, I have something you need. You know what? Let's get married. Utilitarian approach. I'll go to work, you look after the kids, you look after the kids, I go to work, you provide me with this, I'll provide you with this. Utilitarianism. Bartering. We'll barter. That's marriage. That's the kind of marriage that's lowest level marriage. Lowest level marriage, utilitarian approach. And that's the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. It says, any love which is dependent on something else, when that something disappears, the love disappears. Okay? I like you because you have a nice car and you give me a ride somewhere. I like you very much. One day the car disappears. I don't like you anymore. How come I don't call you anymore? Well, you don't serve a purpose anymore, so I don't like you anymore. The friendship was utilitarian approach. When the woman got old and ugly, the guy says, it's time for a new wife. She's not providing me with something that I desire. Utilitarian approach. But when he got old and he couldn't provide the finances, it's time to move on. So utilitarian approach. So that's the lowest level of love. That's the lowest level of relationship. Number two. Go to a higher level of relationship. Chaver ledaga. A friend for worries. We're coming up to the Megillah. We're going to read the Megillah. Esther. And the worst wife you could ever get was the wife of Haman's wife. But he deserved her very well. Her name was Zeresh. And at least she fulfilled one purpose. That was, when he went home, he told her all his problems. That's a chaver ledaga. A person comes home, they want to talk to someone. Get something off their chest. And today people are so lonely, they'll just use anyone. Anyone, they want to vent. They need to get something off their chest. The first person they see, you know, usually it's the rabbi. Because it's free. Doesn't cost money. You come to the rabbi, vent, and I get up. You got a therapist, you got to pay $75 an hour, minimum, whatever it is. Chaver ledaga, someone to whom to share sorrows, troubles, joys. If you want to walk, when your child is getting married, you want to walk to the chuppah with someone. You want to share the joy of marriage. Someone loses a friend, you want to share it, the pain with someone else. It's sharing pain, sharing joy. Joys are multiplied and sorrows are divided when shared. Interesting idea. So when you are happy and you see someone else happy, you're even more happy. When you're sad, you see someone else sad, sorrow goes away. The Talmud says when someone's sick and someone else visits them, they take away 1/60th of their sickness. This is a sharing of, to a certain extent, empathy makes the load lighter. So that's the second value of marriage. The second level. The third level, which is the highest level of marriage. Chaver ledea. Chaver ledea means a joining of minds. Joining of minds. What is the word used for Adam consummating his relationship? What's the word used for Adam consummating his relationship with Hava, with Eve? What? He knows. Very good. Excellent. It says, Vayeda Adam et Hava Ishto. Adam knew his wife, Hava. So that's the highest level of marriage. They're now friends of knowledge. Which means, it's a very important idea. Before a person has a physical relationship, they have to have this intellectual relationship. And this is where dating today is failing miserably. Because people think, you go to a movie, you're dating. Wrong. Why? What is dating all about? Dating all about is communicating. Getting to know each other intellectually. So now I went out on 50 dates, took it to 50 movies. I danced on the dance floor with her 50 times. We never talked. We've been out together. Spent time together. But that's not dating. That's not getting anywhere. Because the first step is getting to know the other party. So that's very important. And the truth is, marriage is all three aspects of this. There's a certain amount of utilitarianism. There's a certain amount of sharing joys and happiness. And then there's a certain amount of intellectual union. There has to be a intellectual union. There has to be some kind of mutually enjoyable intellectual communication between the two. It's got to be someone you can talk to. Meeting of the minds. It's got to be a meeting of the minds. The Rambam says the meeting of the minds comes before the meeting of the body. How do we know? Because that's the sequence. First he knows her, then he has her. The Rambam says first he's going to know someone. Then he, today it's the other way around. They hop in the bed and then they know each other afterwards. Usually they just hop out again and then disappear. But knowledge has got to come first. And knowledge takes time. Okay, let's go back to companionship. Now this is interesting because today we're seeing more and more older couples. We have a couple in our shul, they're in the 80s. And when they walk together holding hands, they're in love. The way he looks at her is amazing. The way she looks at him, they're in love. How do they do that? We had a unit, what was it, 15 years ago or less. Maybe 10 years ago we had their 50th wedding anniversary. And we had just a person passed away last week who was married 70 years. He was 93. 70 years. I love. The wife said she still cooks two plates of food. She thinks she still, you know, sometimes she forgets. It just happened a week ago. She said, I'm married 70 years. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, but how does a person keep this spark alive? We have to remember, number one, very important. The years of romance and physical relationship activity are shorter and less enduring than the years of sustained lifelong friendship into old age. You know, sometimes I hear, this is weird, a person comes to me, says, why don't you marry that woman? You're such good friends with her. I said, rabbis, we're like brother and sister. What do you mean? That's the best marriage. The best marriage is when she's your best friend. Don't you understand that? No, it's too close. What are you talking about? People are weird. I don't understand it. Where are they coming from? We're like brother and sister. It's the best. If you're so close, get married. No, it's too close. What do you think marriage is all about then? Marriage means you got to be distant. It's too close. I don't understand it. There's a story. A person went to Rabbi Victor Miller, who was a great rabbi, also wrote many books, Rejoice, O Youth, and other books. And there was an older gentleman who went to the Rabbi Victor Miller, and he's been out with 200 or 500 dates. And Rabbi Victor Miller says, no, did you find someone? He says, well, he says, Rabbi, he says, to tell you the truth, this last girl I saw was ideal, everything was great. We just didn't click. So the rabbi turned around and he said, there's something wrong with your clicker. Something wrong with the clicker. The clicker's not working. So we have to remember, number one, very important, the years of physical relationship are limited. They're short. Intense physical relationship is short. Okay, today we have Viagra and all sorts of drugs. The truth is, that's not what it's about. The main thing is the friendship. The main thing is the companionship. And companionship must precede love. So the best friends, that's the idea. That's what marriage is all about. Don't they get the idea? People today don't understand that. Marriage is not friendship. Marriage is all about lust and desire. It's not. It's about friendship. That's what it is. Two of the seven blessings under the chuppah talk about friends. Sameach tisamach re'im ahuvim. Beloved friends. Kisamecha yitzich al Gan Eden b'kenem. Just like your creator made your forefathers rejoice in Gan Eden. Number two. It says, Asher bara sason v'simcha hatam v'kala ahava achva. He created joy and rejoicing, bride and groom, love and brotherhood. She's like my sister. That's it. That's the highest level you can get in marriage. You're not related and she's here like your sister. That's what it's about. She's like your sister. So that's very important. Huh? No. I'll tell you why. I just had an argument with him a week ago. She now has a different boyfriend. I said, why didn't you marry her? She's engaged to someone else. Why didn't you marry? We're too close. Oh, too close. We're like brother and sister. Okay, your loss is loss. The next time he falls in love, it's the same thing, because it gets too close, so I can't marry you now. No, we have created joy and gladness, Hashem says. Bridegroom and bride, laughter and exaltation, pleasure and delight, love, fellowship, peace and companionship. That's marriage. 2 out of 7 blessings, companionship. All right, David Abu Darham, very great Sephardic scholar, Middle Ages, questions why these 7 blessings in the chuppah do not mention procreation. Interesting. Think about it. None of the blessings under the chuppah are on procreation. Isn't that a mitzvah? Isn't that part of the mitzvah? No. Companionship. Rejoicing. Where's procreation? His answer, these blessings, because they recited every wedding, had to relate to people who could not have children as well. So therefore, marriage is not just for people who can have children. Marriage is for everyone. And we tell people when they're older and they're single, Lo tov hiot adam levado. It's not good for a person to be alone. There's no time limits on that. A person should always be married, always. Companionship is very important. Yes?
Isn't it also because of all the things that, of those blessings, but all blessings that people have under their control, that one they don't?
That's true.
That's not necessarily
able. But at least give them a blessing, give them a bracha. You should have children. No, well, maybe they're married at the age of 50 or 60. And there's no. Yeah. So, in terms of law, procreation is important. In terms of practical life, the Torah does not consider it primary. And the Shulchan Aruch says, the Code of Jewish Law says, even a person who cannot have children should marry, so as not to be alone. There we have it. Mitzvah. Just get married even without procreation, just not to be alone. Okay, so those are the 4 different aspects of marriage. And any questions?
Yeah.
Oh, number 5. I just found number 5. The creation of a family. Creation of a family, which is similar to procreation. The Jewish people was first a family. The influence of the family model is so great, it casts its shadow on all of Jewish history. We still refer to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as the 4 fathers. Why are they called 4 fathers? Never figured out. Just joking. Okay. F-O-R-E. Okay. And the 4 mothers. Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah called our mothers. So who are we? If they're our fathers and our mothers, who are we? Right? We're the B'nai Israel, so that's a family unit. It's the only people who are referred to as a family. We are called a family. We have fathers, mothers, and children. B'nai Israel. We're called the sons of Israel, the children of Israel. The relationship to God is also construed as a family model. Interesting. If you look at the book of Hosea, God and Hosea have an interesting conversation. Hosea was a prophet. Idol worshippers, do something. Hosea doesn't want to bother. Hosea says, God, if your wife is adulterous, divorce her. Divorce her. He's talking about the Jewish people. Divorce them. This way he's not bothered. He's not bothered. God's not going to bother him anymore. God's going to divorce the Jewish people. He's off. The prophet's off. Doesn't have to go and rebuke anyone. He lost his job. So God says, divorce your wife. She was also fooling around with other men, I know. He said, what can I do? He says, I had 4 children from her. How can I divorce her? She's my wife. How can I divorce her? So God says, don't tell me to divorce my wife either. It's a beautiful... So most of the rabbis say this is all poetry. This is not... He never had a wife, Hosea, whatever. He had a wife. She never committed adultery or anything like that. Because the halacha is, if a wife commits adultery, you have to divorce her. But so obviously it's all a parable over here. But the parable is in the form... God has a wife. Who's his wife? Where's his wife? What does that mean, a wife? Obviously, it's not talking about a physical relationship. It's about a spiritual relationship. So even that model is considered, Har Sinai was considered the marriage between husband and wife, between God and Israel, whatever that means. It's a spiritual thing. Song of Songs, right? So that's it. So we are called the children of Israel. We may think that a family should be considered a natural sociological unit. Right? So we are the ones who think family is the main thing. Jews, Judaism views family as being so important. And unfortunately, today people, you know, the kibbutz movement, they try to break families, basically. They took the children away from the family and raised them separately from the parents. The whole movement was a disaster. And today it's all falling apart. So today we know the importance of family. Even secular society, even the presidents of the United States are talking about family values. Clinton started talking about family values. Before him, Bush, before him, family values. He heard about family values because they realize it's one of the problems of society today. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions, sorry?